Hello and welcome to another edition of Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
Oh, I thought I was gonna sneeze. I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you not only by sneezing, but by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2011 was the subject of a story at sports.ws titled "The Legend of Rasheed Wallace." Kind of goes through his career. There's some strange sort of phrasing about his time with the Blazers. Quote, after the years in Oregon, the Blazers had grown tired of his antics, tired of his attitude, his quirk, his propensity for infuriating officials, the temper, the conspiracies, the seemingly harmless but overwhelmingly painstaking presence on the roster. What the fuck is that, Katie? He goes on in this piece to compare the ultimate redemption of his career to Star Wars, Jurassic Park 2, and When Harry Met Sally. It's a very bad article, but we're in the lean periods. It's July 15th. Katie, what do you have? Do you have editor's notes for Austin Kent, the writer of this article?
I mean, good film refs. Now I'm pretty curious to see what was the comparison for When Harry Met Sally?
Oh, here, let's just I'll read this section here. He goes so after the sort of talk about his quote unquote painstaking presence on the roster, kind of turns around. Quote, the thing about Rasheed Wallace is his innocence, says Ryan Nelson, online editor of Slant Magazine, perhaps the literal embodiment of the intersection that connects attitude and the NBA. Quote, he wouldn't front on or off the court and hid nothing. That transparency got him in trouble and won him many followers. Perhaps it's hindsight that allows us to look back on the fiery forward's career with admiration, as if it's the big picture and it alone that truly allows us to truly appreciate, this is truly twice in that sentence, what Wallace brought to the table. Without such perception, like a movie cut short before its natural conclusion, there would be no resolution, no salvation or redemption. The Galactic Empire would triumph. Harry and Sally would just be awkward friends and nobody would ever realize how to trick the Tyrannosaurus back into the freighter and out of San Diego. Okay. Okay. I don't need three film references in one four-line paragraph. But hey, good for Austin Kent, I suppose. Yeah. We're into July, Katie. Not many anniversaries going on right now.
Did they talk to anyone on the team?
No, just the Slam editor, apparently.
So then I don't really believe to lay the bold claim that the team was growing sick of him.
Yeah.
And for all of those different reasons. Yeah. I think you got to talk to some players.
Yeah, that's a tad presumptive. That's some real blog boy shit for sure. Anyway,
well,
that's the Sheed anniversary for today. He was the subject of this piece that I'm sure he never read.
I hope he never read it. But I'm also sure.
Oh, they speak to one Pistons
stuff.
Fan. They speak to a Pistons fan named Natalie Cito, and she seems to be pretty pro Sheed, which is nice. How could you not be?
Okay.
I guess if you're a Pistons fan, it's going to be obvious that you'll be pro Sheed. But yeah, weird stuff. Also, Robert Horry comes up in this. Your boy Robert Horry comes up in this story as well, in Tales of the Finals and everything. But anyway, that's Sheed for today, Katie. A bit of a weird one, but again, there's not so many anniversaries of Sheed doing things on the floor on July the 15th, because basketball only happens on July 15th during pandemics. Otherwise, Katie, how are you?
I'm hanging in. I'm hanging in.
Yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, you know, the general malaise of everything.
Oh, no. I have a migraine. I woke up with a migraine because of all the humidity. So that's more where I'm coming from. Less malaise, more my brain. My brain feels like a little knife is getting closer to it with every moment.
Will it be more comforting for you and better for your brain if I speak in this sort of NPR voice throughout the podcast, Katie? Was this a little bit better?
I think that might make me more uncomfortable.
All right, I'll just be my big, dumb, loud self then instead. We've got some stuff to talk about today, Katie. Of course, the NBA Finals are still going on. It's a little bit bizarre. I've been watching them in a very relaxed way, I have found. I don't find myself feeling the need to tweet about games or anything like that as they're happening all that often. It's just a matter of, you know, watching the cool, fun basketball teams play cool, fun basketball. It's you know, a very interesting, but also kind of like, it's hard to have strong opinions on this finals. It's just pretty cool overall, is I think the overarching takeaway. But we're going to talk specifically about Giannis Antetokounmpo in today's podcast. Last week, we kind of dove into Chris Paul and his really remarkable arc to get to this point. And now we're going to dig into Giannis, who the last three games in the finals has been basically a fire-breathing dragon. He's been incredible. He's sort of grappling with this sort of new style of play that seems to be both against his natural instincts as like a lead ball handler, but also definitely leading to more success for the Bucks. It's very cool. And he also had one of the coolest blocks you'll ever see in game four against the Suns in crunch time last night too. So we're going to spend the segment off the top of the show just talking about Giannis and his road to this finals. And now it's a 2-2 series. Maybe his first NBA championship is on the horizon as well. So that'll be good. And then to the final segment, the segment we're trying out this week, I have a concept in mind. I have a name for the segment. I have it all prepared, but I'm not telling Katie what it is because I want it to be a surprise. And I guess that means everyone else on the podcast gets a surprise as well in the back part of the show. Unless, of course, you have read the show description before clicking on this episode, and then you probably know what's going on. But either way, that's what we have in today's show for you. You can, of course, before we get to the content, just a reminder, you can go to patreon.com/abasketball with two H's. Leave us $4 US, $5.50 Canadian per month, and you get into our Discord chat. You get our free mailbag episodes on the Patreon as well. I guess they're not free, you're paying for them, but you get them, and they're exclusive to you. And you get ad-free episodes of this here podcast as well, access to special events when we do those again. It's much appreciated when you give us the support over there. It helps us keep the podcast rolling, keep the lights on and all that stuff. So thanks in advance for being a pal and being a Patreon subscriber. All right, Katie, let's get to it. We're going to talk about Giannis coming up in just 1 second. All right, Katie, we are here talking about Giannis Antetokounmpo, who, of course, has been the star of these NBA finals, and it's a star that was kind of unexpected considering he busted up his knee in the middle of the Eastern Conference Finals, and it didn't look like he was maybe even going to play to start this series, let alone at all. And here we are, four games in. He's played all four games. He's playing heavy minutes in all four games, and he's looked freaking awesome for the last three of them. He is just killing it. And we wanted to take today's show to sort of talk about Giannis and where he's at in his career, the story of these finals, just sort of examine the whole Giannis arc, similarly to how we did it with Chris Paul last week. Obviously, very different arcs in their careers, a much shorter one for Giannis as well. You know, four fewer teams played on by Giannis as well from Chris Paul. So definitely a different conversation, but you know, we really enjoyed talking about Chris Paul last week, and you know, there's nothing wrong with digging into the sort of lore of the stars of the finals. And so, Katie, let's start here. I guess just sort of beginning broadly, and we can kind of dig in deeper. You know, Giannis has been the best player in these finals. He's had the most signature moments, in particular the block on DeAndre Ayton in crunch time last night. He's just playing superhuman basketball, despite, again, the knee injury looking like it was maybe going to derail things entirely. How are you sort of taking in this Giannis finals, these playoffs? Like, have you come to appreciate him more during this time? Did you always appreciate him? What's your sort of overarching takeaway from what we've seen from Giannis in this postseason and now in these finals?
Very happily. And mm-hmm. I think really happy for the dude, you know? I don't know that I will come clean that I have been on record. I don't know where, I don't remember where it was, but I have said on a recording that I was surprised that he wasn't like more improved by now in his career. And I will call myself out for that. Because I think it's like a really ineffectual way of talking about players in general, you know, and I hesitate to say like he should be better, quote, because like then I don't really understand what that kind of like what you mean when you say better. You know, do you mean he should be better at shooting? Do you mean he should be better defensively? Like it can encapsulate a lot, right? So I want us to fall out of saying those kinds of things. But I was a little bit reticent maybe on on how where I thought he would be perhaps like this season and last season, you know, and because we've seen him play with the, in these like phenomenal bursts. So I think it was the consistency that that was lacking for me. And a part of me wondered, okay, is that like something within the Bucks system overall? Because there's been a lack of consistency there as well. But now it seems like everything has clicked. And, you know, everything is like flowing in a very fortuitous direction for him. I'm really happy in general that like, he also, the best thing about him is I think he's such like, he just always seems so innocent and like happy and goofy, you know? And yeah. I'm really glad that he hasn't lost any of that in these finals too, because I think something as well, like Chris Paul had it too, like getting injured early on and then coming back and playing. Like I hope to God we don't later hear, oh, you know, it was much worse than was reported and like he's going to need this kinds of surgery. Because I know guys go through the playoffs and just don't. Like, they just play through injuries, you know, and like Kyle Lowry, like his thumb was falling off, you know, and then they deal with it after. So I hope it's not a situation like that. Yeah. You also forgot my favorite when I was comparing the block last night. I think the chase down block is still my favorite. But last night I watched that move in slow motion and I still can't necessarily figure out the physics of it. How he it's sped insane. Up, knew when to jump. Knew when to lift his hand and was also able to watch and get it through. Like his brain was able to comprehend and tell his body when to do this like tiny minute, looks minute, is not block that won't result in a foul so that it's clean as well. So I think the whole sequence, I mean, the whole sequence is phenomenal, but it is, it goes to show it's like something that I think only Giannis is capable, like has a like the physicality and physics and is capable of doing.
Yeah, the spatial awareness on that one is just like, and the screen caps are incredible too. Like you see the first screen cap of like the before and after, where the after is the block happening, and the before is Giannis standing like at the top of the key when the ball has already left Chris Paul's hand, and somehow it's like a single motion jump and rotation to the exact place he needs to be, like kind of blind. It's ridiculous. I would still say the chase down block because it was, you know, the final minutes of game seven and because of just like the drama of it all is still the better one. But we don't got to compare really, you know, they both can be incredible. And man, the Giannis one was super freaking cool. And I think, you know, it has been a finals where I, you know, I'm guilty of it too. And I think this is sort of a thing that I'm trying to drill out of myself. And honestly, I've been trying to do this, like, you know, I think this began sort of when we started interacting on, you know, basketball internet. And I sort of, you helped to change my sort of view of the sport in a lot of ways. And I credit you deeply for that. Where it's just like, it doesn't always have to be harping on the negative shit. It doesn't always have to be, well, why, what is this guy not doing versus what is this guy doing? Because this is very much like the Chris Paul thing last week that we talked about. You can miss an entire dude's career worrying about the things that he doesn't do or hasn't done. And there's like 95% of the profile of a dude is stuff that is incredible and in some ways unprecedented in the form of Giannis. I mean, like we've never seen a dude like this. We've never seen like an ascension like Giannis is either, like a 15th overall pick on grainy footage from the draft. And then within, you know, a half a decade, he's one of the best players alive and a 2-time MVP. And I think, you know, it's the whole like ring shit and it's the whole, you know, need to pile on everybody who loses in the playoffs as though there's some sort of great wrong being done when you lose in a tough playoff series, when you lose to an eventual champion Raptors team in 2019, which was obviously an amazing team. Like there's this sort of like overhyping of how bad and how sort of incomplete players might be because they can't get over a certain hump, which is a very difficult hump to scale. And again, you can kind of miss a dude's career just waiting for those hurdles to be climbed. And sometimes they never get climbed. And you sort of sit there stewing about a guy who had all these sort of lost opportunities. And hopefully Giannis isn't going to have that. And he might win his freaking title here and sort of dispel everything. But it is something you got to just, I'm trying to drill out of myself. It's just the constant need to worry about what the guy's not doing. And this, I think, goes to, we talked about Ben Simmons a couple weeks ago as well. Obviously a lesser sort of overall talent, but still a similar idea. It's, you know,
don't say that.
Fucking dunked
on
Brady.
You just contradicted yourself.
Well, I mean, Giannis is a better basketball player than Ben Simmons. Like, I don't think that's a crazy
thing to say, but
I
think the language of
Ben Simmons isn't great.
Talent, I think that's reductive. Sure. Do you know what I mean?
Fair enough.
I think like that's, I think the semantics of it matter because I think that's what will eventually hopefully change the way that people are one, comfortable talking about players.
Sure.
And I think fluent and talking about players.
Yeah. See, it's constantly trying to drill it out of me. I've been dunked on brained too much in my early days of liking basketball. And it's a constant process of trying to just be more appreciative of things when they're happening and not worrying about what's not happening. And I'm finding this Giannis run to be particularly exciting and fun because there's like a really cool and interesting sort of conflict that even he seems to be kind of going through with himself. And, you know, this goes to the sort of improvement and all this stuff. And like, I don't necessarily know if Giannis needed to make any sort of grand improvements to his game as opposed to, you know, just getting luckier in the playoffs or whatever. But, you know, there has been this sort of transformation he's undergone this year where he's become less of an on-ball player. He's kind of trusting Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday to run the offense a little bit more and sort of giving up and sort of letting go of his lead ball handler instincts while also fighting the little urges to kind of do that stuff again, right? Like we've seen it throughout these playoffs, you know, sometimes, you know, he can't shoot threes. He probably shouldn't shoot threes. It's not good for the team. And he knows that, I'm sure. And I'm sure Bud Budenholzer's talking to him about it. And he still kind of falls into these little moments where it's like, shit, man, if only I could hit those threes, that'd be awesome, right? And so he takes a few and then it doesn't work out so well. And he's kind of oscillating back and forth between that sort of former version of himself where he was the sort of center of the Bucks universe and everything ran through him and it was all him with the ball in his hands. He's a 7-foot point guard in a lot of ways. And now he's kind of more adopted the center role. He's screening, he's working off ball, he's putting his trust in other guys to run the offense. And as it turns out, it leads to him getting like 47 dunks a game and it's pretty damn good for Milwaukee. And just seeing him kind of compete with himself almost and like those old tendencies that maybe led the Bucks down a difficult road and this sort of more open and diversified version of Giannis, like it's just, I've found that to be a pretty exciting thing to watch throughout the playoffs and, you know, wondering, are those old tendencies going to come in at some point? Are they going to hurt the Bucks? Are they going to hold them back? And watching Giannis, like last night was a perfect example. First quarter, he's pretty rough. He takes a couple threes. He doesn't look like he's in it. He's kind of like tired. And then as the game goes on, it's like, okay, I'm just going to screen and dunk and block shots and be a monster. And, you know, I can affect the game just as much off the ball as I can on it. And that sort of realization. I don't know. Have you kind of noticed a similar thing? Like what's your sort of view of Giannis's sort of arc throughout these playoffs kind of been as he's tried to adopt this sort of new style of play?
I mean, I would chalk it up more to him being growing more comfortable in his role as kind of an all-around team leader and a person, and to your point, who things have to flow through, but who then has also become comfortable with the fact that, like, he can take a step back at times, you know? And I don't think that was something that he shouldered with the most ease, I'd say, in seasons past, you know? There was, like, a little bit of reluctance to do that, or perhaps it was pressure on him too, to take that up too early. Like that's like the leadership mantle is something that I don't think we give enough credit in terms of players who do take it on relatively early in their career with the amount. It's just such like a nuanced role. And it's one of those things that it only takes time. You know, like you can't really rush something like that. I think some guys have a knack for it earlier on, depending on their personalities. But Giannis, I think, shrunk a little bit from it, or perhaps just kind of wanted to be a leader on the floor and maybe not off of it. But I think he just seemed more comfortable all around. And I think that's what's struck me the most, because I don't actually think the Bucks get this far if he wasn't. And comfortable, I think, also with the fact of losing, because I think we've seen him in the past, too, where he's taken loss is extremely hard and not been able to bounce back from them, you know, like approaching every game, especially in a final series, as a clean slate, because it is, right? Like you take the learnings from the past games, but you can't necessarily apply them because you know that that game's going to be, that current game's going to be different, completely different. So I think just like the flexibility, like comfort and confidence overall.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a ton of fun. And yeah, like the leadership side of things, the sort of like, you know, I think back to that 2019 series and the, you know, despondent nature of that Bucks team after they lost that game 3 to the Raptors, the double overtime one. And, you know, it kind of felt like, oh, things could swing here pretty badly for Milwaukee. And they ultimately did. It doesn't feel like they have that anymore. It's kind of like this year when the Clippers kind of figured out their issues with folding and giving up. Like they were like, oh, no, we can just like keep playing very hard and still potentially win these things. And the Bucks seem to have adopted that spirit a little bit, too. And like how you mentioned Giannis, like, is so innocent and nice and kind of gives that off. The reason I love him is because he's kind of like Midwest nice in a lot of ways, where like he gives off like the very innocent, nice, happy-go-lucky, you know, I'm just happy to be here vibe, but then also like is a straight up just killer and is very happy to let you know it when he's like destroyed you. It's a pretty cool sort of vibe for a guy to have, I think. It is extremely Minnesota nice, or I guess Wisconsin nice. Again, Midwest nice, where it's just like the sort of the aggression is underneath all of the sort of niceness on the exterior. So we talked about Chris Paul last week, and this is obviously a different story with Giannis. He hasn't had the ups and downs of the multiple teams. It's been more of a sort of steady climb for him outside of the last couple of years where it's sort of plateaued. You know, Chris Paul's is a longer arc as well, and there's so many different through lines to it. But, you know, are you finding this Giannis run to be similarly satisfying to Chris Paul's in any way? Like, you know, I think we're both super in on what Chris Paul's been doing this year. But Giannis, you know, there's a certain amount of gratification, I think, to watching him kind of seize it and kind of figure this out for himself on the fly too, right? Like, have you found it to be on the same level as Chris Paul in terms of just like nice arcs to watch unfold?
Yeah, yes, but it is also just apples and oranges, right? Like you can be simultaneously sure, yeah, pretty happy for both of these guys. Like I'm pretty happy for both of these teams for how far they've come. And just again, like I think that it's a little bit weird watching these finals because I have the sense, I might just be alone in this, but I have the sense that they're unfortunately not going to be as memorable to a lot of fans, or maybe to, I don't want to say, I hate saying the discourse, but like to what we think of when we think of historic finals runs.
Sure.
Even though to both of these teams, that's exactly what they are. But I do think, yeah, what's happened in the playoffs will be more lasting and impactful seasons to come for so many teams, you know, that kind of look at this road there and say like, oh, this is much more attainable than we previously thought. And there are ways to do this. And it's not just stacking stars, you know, and banking everything on that. So I think that to me has been so satisfying to see. And the fact that like Chris Paul is leading that on one side and Giannis is leading that on the other, I think is very fitting for the both of them, you know, just when you look at nonlinear paths and the kind of shit that they've had to go up against to get here. So, yeah, I think it can be doubly satisfying. I think it should be doubly satisfying. I don't think you need to pick. I mean, if you're a Suns or a Bucks fan, I suppose then you're picking. But otherwise, I don't think you really need to pick, you know, like who is this more proof for? It's kind of heartbreaking that it's only going to be that kind of proof for one of them, you know?
Yeah.
Like I want Chris Paul to have this too, but I recognize that, yeah, there will be one winner. But the fact that they've both got here, I think that's more telling to me.
Yeah, I came into the series wanting the Suns to win because of the Chris Paul thing. And also, you know, there's like the rivalry, I guess, between the Raptors and the Bucks. And so that kind of seeps into my thinking too. But what Giannis is doing and the way he's doing it has really made me so I am like basically apathetic as to who wins. And I, you know, I'm going to be really happy for whoever pulls it off. I think I'm still probably leaning Suns because, you know, nothing's guaranteed, but I feel like Giannis, especially with the things he's figured out this year, feels like he's going to be back here at some point, where I do think this is maybe like the best shot Chris Paul's going to have. And so that's kind of where I'll come down in my rooting leanings by the end of the series. But yeah, it's more of now just a series where I'm just enjoying the two teams going at it. And like last night's game was so goddamn good. And there was so much drama throughout it, you know, between the Devin Booker foul trouble to the foul that didn't get called where he bear hugged Drew Holiday to Giannis's block to Chris Middleton hitting crazy shots to both Middleton and Booker having 40, like just a perfect finals game. And really, I'm just rooting for games like that now. And yeah, if the Suns win, I'll be happy. If the Bucks wins, I'll be slightly less happy, but also still happy for Giannis in particular. And yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting. You say that this might not be one of the most memorable finals. And I think I agree just because of the lack of, I'm not going to say lack of star power, because obviously there's a ton of star power, but the lack of sort of, you know, historic level. It's not just, you know, the stakes of, oh, this is the finals for this season. It's also like historical stakes. And we've had that with the Warriors and LeBron and all that in the last decade or so. And I just think like the LeBron era has really warped our brains when it comes to thinking about finals. And so hopefully this is sort of a, maybe a move forward and a bit of a refresher and a sort of reset on what the finals are. And maybe we do look back on this one as sort of a passing of the baton and a changing of eras. And I'm sure some other, you know, worldly superstar will hop in and kind of take that place and become the new one who's competing with history in finals over many years. But for now, it's not clear who that's going to be. And some of the best candidates aren't exactly on teams that are in the best positions to really get them there. And I think we could look back on this finals as a, maybe even, you know, going back to the bubble finals and even the Raptors winning the title. Maybe this is sort of a new era where it is more open. There is more of a pathway to teams who previously thought they would go without ever winning a title to potentially being in the mix. And, you know, it's to do with the talent in the league. It's to do with the, you know, the difficulties in building super teams. It's not easy to pull off. And a lot of these teams have kind of maxed themselves out in terms of what they're able to do in terms of bringing in other star talent. And it's just kind of a, it feels fresh and new. And while it maybe doesn't feel like it has the sort of historical stakes of previous finals, I think, you know, 10 years from now, I think we will look back on this pretty fondly. And hopefully we'll look at it as a bit of a dawning of a new era in the NBA. Or it's just the beginning of Giannis winning titles for 6 years. And that would be cool, too. It would be a fun little footnote in his career as well. One other thing I've been thinking about, Katie, throughout this is, and, you know, obviously, you know, we support the Raptors, and you know, the Giannis thing was certainly, you know, him sounding the Supermax last summer was certainly a thing that Raptors fans had interest in, because there was a potential that they were going to try to lure him. There was no secret about it. That was their whole plan for a long time, and other teams had that plan too. And I'm finding myself really thankful right now that Giannis signed the Supermax last summer or winter or whenever the fuck it was. I have no idea. Was it November? Who knows? I'm glad that this finals is not taking place under the sort of shadow of will he or won't he stay, you know, like that's not fun. You know, it was the whole Kawhi thing. It was sort of part of the bit, I guess, with him and the will he won't he thing. But with Giannis, you know, I'm just glad that the sort of specter of him leaving is gone and we get to enjoy this and know that, you know, there isn't going to be some sort of great cataclysm to befall the Bucks if they lose this series, because they have Giannis for 5 more years and it's going to be just fine and they're going to continue on, and this might be the beginning of something really special. And I think that's cool. Are you similarly happy? Do you even care? I'm glad that there's not a, you know, the Giannis conversation about what his future is going to be, and we can just kind of enjoy this playoff run and these finals for what they are and not worry too much about tomorrow.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
I never thought he was coming to Toronto.
That's fair. I, you know, it was never the most likely thing in the world. You certainly got your hopes up.
I never thought he was leaving Milwaukee to, like, he's not that type of person from what we've seen in terms of his commitment and the way that he makes clear his commitment, you know, like, I think the most trepidation there seemed to be from him was last summer, right after the bubble, because I think that was a particularly brutal stretch for the Bucks. And he was home in Greece, and I remember this picture of him. It was a very eerie picture. He was like in all white, in like a white windbreaker and some kind of white tech windbreaker pant material, sitting outside by his pool on the top of this like beautiful mountain in Greece somewhere. And like he was lit up. It was, there was all this like luminescence behind him from the pool, and he was lit up and it looked so eerie. And he was like taking, he did a statement there, like, or he was like taking meetings there. And it felt to me like, I don't know, why would you, it seemed like he had gone all that distance to like make a statement and like maybe toy with us. But I think once he made his mind up, that he was staying, and like they offered him obviously what he wanted, he wants to win a title there. After that, then I guess like it's a totally, then I think, as you said, there's, of course he's going to be back on the stage again. Maybe it is with the Bucks. Maybe they win this season and they want to try and repeat, you know? I think that's probably in his mind, but he was never leaving until I think he saw that commitment through.
See, I thought, you know, the whole Budenholzer discourse, the whole, you know, the Bogdan Bogdanovich botched sign and trade, like that seemed to maybe be a bit of a catalyst potentially on him leaving. But again, I'm glad that it's not just the Raptors, like any team. I'm glad he didn't leave for anybody. And I'm glad that the question of his future was solved before these finals. And you know, because as much as the Raptors run was, and the Raptors run with Kawhi is such a different thing. It's like this sort of single year perfect arc and everything, and so it wasn't quite, I think, as dire in terms of, you know, the Bucks losing Giannis was you know, potentially a disaster for them. The Raptors losing Kawhi sucked, but also it was kind of expected, and there was sort of the deal going in the whole way. And so, you know, I don't think the conversation about him really dominated the finals in the way that I'm sure it would have if Giannis was here. You know, they kind of make their way through a sort of injured Eastern Conference. Maybe it's a little uninspiring, their run to the finals. At least I kind of thought it was in a lot of ways. You know, you get to the finals, you go down 0-2. And I feel like instead of, oh, can Giannis pull this team back? He played so well in game two. Maybe he's got it in him here. He looks great. The conversation is, uh-oh, they're down 0-2. If they get swept here, is Giannis gone? And I'm just really glad that that's not the case. It's, you know, the transaction industrial complex is taking a rest. And I'm very pleased in hindsight, in a way that I did not expect to be when I was sort of like, yeah, Giannis should leave and cause chaos a year ago. I've grown apparently since then too. Katie, any other thoughts on Giannis here before we move on to our segment we're trying out this week? Any sort of parting shots on what we've seen from him throughout the playoffs here, or what to expect going forward?
I just thought it was really cute that when someone asked why he left in the first quarter, he said he had to take a tinkle.
Yeah,
I'm surprised you didn't put that in the notes.
Yeah, Honest and Tinkle Kumpo is the name of the podcast today. No, it's not.
No, that's thanks. Terrible.
No. Yeah, I forgot to put that in the notes. I'm a fool. Thanks for bringing that up. It was very good and nice. We love Giannis and his honesty. We're going to come up on the other side with a segment we're trying out this week and leave the talk of the finals behind, in a special segment that I'm still not revealing to Katie. We'll reveal it on the other side. Stick around. All right, we have reached the segment we're trying out this week. And this week, Katie, I have a surprise for you. It's a segment that follows a similar format to a favorite segment of ours from the years. You know, we've had, did Stan Van say this? We've had, did Nick Nurse say this? I can't remember the most recent version of this we did as well. Was it the, some quotes, Mark Cuban or Elon Musk or something like that? I don't know. We did something along those lines. This one, Katie, infuses two things that I know you love. One is Rasheed Wallace, and two is the 1994 action thriller Speed. I think we talked about Speed recently on either this podcast or another podcast. I have it lined up in my Amazon Prime queue or my Disney Plus queue. I'm really ready to watch Speed again. And with that in mind, just because I thought of a rhyming segment that we could do on today's podcast, we're doing a little segment here called Sheed or Speed, where I've taken quotes from the film Speed and from Rasheed Wallace throughout his long career in front of microphones, and you have to tell me if the quote is from Speed or from Sheed.
You didn't want to call it Need for Sheed?
That's also good, too, but I wanted Speed in there. We could do Need for Sheed. That's cool, too.
It's okay.
Okay, cool. But yeah, that's the segment for today, Katie. Are you very excited?
I am actually very excited. A part of me is like laughing and being like, this is going to be so easy, but that usually backfires.
So yeah, I have 10 quotes here for you. You have to tell me whether they are from Sheed or from Speed. Here's the first one for you. Quote, they talk to you like your best friend and they don't even know you. Is that Speed or Sheed?
That's a good one. I'm trying to think if this was a conversation when one of the bomb negotiators is talking to the bomber in Speed, or if it's Rasheed Wallace at a press conference. I'm going to go with Sheed.
You're incorrect.
I hate negotiators, Jack. They talk to you like they're your best friend and they don't even know you.
You were right.
Ooh,
on
I
it.
Was
it
right.
Is a quote from Dennis Hopper's character. Howard Payne is the character's name. This is him talking to Jack, Keanu Reeves' character, about negotiators and how
they're
your best friend and don't even know. Your instinct was right and you're wrong on the first one, Katie. Oh,
how
hell yeah.
How did I talk myself out of that? Jeez. Okay.
All
Imposter syndrome at work.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun to hear you talk yourself through that one from my end. I was giddily waiting for you to declare Sheed as your answer. So you're 0-1. We move on to the next one here. The quote is, quote, I'm not a big fan of individuality.
That's Rasheed.
That is Rasheed Wallace talking about, the unit that was the Detroit Pistons in the mid-2000s and how they weren't really a team of all-stars. They were a unit. They were a family bond. Not a big fan of individuality. You're correct. You're 1-2. The next quote here is, quote, I guess that was his wannabe retaliation.
You're really picking short ones, huh?
I know. I have to. It's difficult. If you go too long, you get context clues that can't be in there.
Mm-hmm. That's Sheed, I'm going to go with.
That is Rasheed Wallace talking about some sort of skirmish he had on the court. You're 2-3, Katie. Good job. We'll move on here to 4 then. Quote, poor people are crazy. I'm eccentric.
That's from Speed.
Yeah, that's Howard Payne again.
Yeah.
No, poor people are crazy, Jack. I'm eccentric. Get the money. Let's go. Come on, let's go.
A truly batshit character to read quotes from, if I do say so myself. You're 3-4. I'm losing it. The first one I had you, and now I'm a little bit concerned. We continue on to the 5 on this list. It is, quote, they're the police. Your taxes are paying their salaries. When we die, they got to take a pay cut.
That's Speed.
Sure they are. They're the police. Hey, your taxes are paying their salary. We die, they got to take a pay cut. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's Alan Ruck, his character on the bus from Speed. I thought maybe I could trick you into thinking Sheed was going on an anti-police diatribe at some point, but apparently not. We'll continue on with the next one here. You're now 4-5, Katie. Very impressive. This one is, quote, it wasn't nothing. It was just a shot.
That's Sheed.
Damn it. I thought maybe a gunshot. Damn it. yeah, that's Sheed. You're 5-6 and really questioning my ability to assemble good questions in this game. Damn it. Next one here. Okay, this is a back and forth. So I will give you, it's a question and answer. The question is, what if you win? The answer is, then tomorrow we'll play another one.
That's Speed.
Fuck!
What if you win?
Then tomorrow we'll play another one.
But I'm not available to drive tomorrow. Busy.
That is Speed. That is Sandra Bullock's character talking to Keanu Reeves' character on the bus about how it's all just a game that Jack's playing, trying to defuse this bomb. Just another one of 82, I guess, with, 30 people's lives in the balance. God damn it. This is not going well. That's 6 of 7 now, Katie? God damn it. All right, next one here. Here we go. In 200 years, we've gone from I regret, but I have one life to give for my country to fuck you.
I regret? Can you read the first part?
I regret I have but one life to give for my country to fuck you.
Huh. I think that's Speed.
Yeah, fuck. That's Howard Payne, this freaky ass motherfucker.
Oh, in 200 years, we've come from my regret, but I have one life to give for my country to fuck you.
I was like, I can't think. I was trying to contextualize it. I was like, I don't think Rashid would say that. Yeah. And I do. I could hear the echoes of that in his voice from my many watchings of this film.
Yeah, yeah. That's Howard Payne once again. You're now 7 for 8. You're crushing this, Katie. Really, really bursting my bubble. I thought I was off to such a great start with number one. I want to go back to where we were on question number one and things were fine and good. Next one here for you. Quote, 2 years I invested in that job. 2 years I invested in my life. You couldn't understand the commitment I have.
That's from Speed.
Fuck off!
2 years I invested myself in it. You couldn't understand the kind of commitment that I have. You were in a man's life's work, and you think you can walk away. You got blinders on to the world. But I got your attention now, didn't I, Jack?
Do you know the part of Speed it's from?
Isn't it another one of the, what's his name? Howard Payne talking about?
Yeah, it's Dennis Hopper. Howard Payne. Yeah. Yep.
Like why his motivation for like doing terrorism?
Yeah, it's him being particularly perturbed with Jack and Jeff Daniels' character, who I can't, Harry, I think, for foiling his elevator bombing in the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
Damn it. I thought I could
Harry
maybe...
gets blown up. Oh, yeah. Man.
Spoiler really thought maybe alert. I could get Sorry. You thinking this is about his coaching career or something. Sheed's coaching Mm-mm. career. This is... You're either very good and have seen Speed 10,000 times, or I'm very bad at this game.
Yeah, I think you underestimate how many times I've seen Speed, and obviously at a time when my brain was still developing.
Sure.
So it's in there. Like, it's in there. Like, it's my childhood.
Yeah, yeah. Damn it. All right, last one here. You have a chance to go 9 for 10 and really render this segment just the thing that I should not have concocted. The quote is, quote, that whole clock thing had me messed up.
Oh, that's Rashid.
God damn it. I thought the clock, the bomb timer, maybe that might be a thing.
I see your logic,
something that
yeah.
Jack says underneath the bus when he's underneath there. Oh, Well, Katie, this has been a remarkable failure on my part. A resounding success from you.
I just want to note that I technically... Like, this is a good lesson in never doubting yourself, because technically I was correct the first time on question one, and I would have gone 10 for 10 had I not hesitated and doubted myself. So I'm kind of disappointed at myself at that, despite this near perfect score.
Trust your instincts. Trust your knowledge of the great film Speed. We got to talk about Howard Payne for a second, Katie. A true lunatic. One of the better action movie villains I can recall. Like right up there with Hans Gruber and Jeremy Irons in the third Die Hard, I think. My question to you is, who is the Howard Payne of the NBA?
I don't know if anyone is that deranged, you know? Let's think. Like, actually, it might be Mark Cuban, because it's like, oh, who's self-important? Who thinks that their schemes are, like, uncrackable?
Sure.
You know? Who thinks that mm-hmm. they're even like, his weird obsession with, like, gadgetry and tech, yep. Running his team on an algorithm reminds me of Payne's, like, his usage of, well, I don't know, his advanced bomb knowledge.
Yeah, Herolibus Vulgaris is like a henchman for him. Like, I'm sure he doesn't have henchmen, I suppose. He's kind of a lone wolf in that movie.
That's the thing. My only hesitation with Cuban is I don't know that he'd be the one to get his hands dirty, you know?
Yeah. Mm. That's a good point. I was going to suggest maybe Neil Olshay.
Yeah, maybe. But again, I think he's like, he doesn't want to get his hands dirty. Look at him now. He's so uncomfortable. And he might hopefully get fired.
Yeah, yeah. Good reporting by our pal Sean Hyken out there and really grilling the shit out of that stupid franchise. Yeah. Cuban's a good one. If they're trying to think of like players who are particularly deranged the way Howard Payne is, who would go on sort of philosophical soliloquies about things, real monologue about before you kill the guy sort of shit. Like Chris Paul is too good a person, I think, probably to really fit the description, but he's got those sort of lunatic tendencies, I suppose.
I don't know that it's a player. I honestly don't know that it's a player. Also, if we're going to shout out reporting on that, I want to shout out, and everyone should read this, Diana Moskowitz story.
Yes. Yes.
On Defector, which I read yesterday in its entirety. And it's just like the most concise read I've seen. If you're unfamiliar with the Chauncey Billups case, kind of starting from then to now, and the Blazers' complete mishandling of the situation by not necessarily approaching it at all and hoping no one would find out.
Yeah. Fucking Blazers, okay, but, man.
Yeah, I don't know that there's like an obvious terrorist in the NBA, which isn't the worst thing to say.
You know what? That feels like a good place to leave it. Shout out to Speed. Good movie. I can't wait to watch it. Very, very ready to dive back into it. And even Speed 2. It's pretty bad, but
not as good.
It has its charms. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. I got to say, Speed 1, like a live and die Speed 1. I watched Speed 2. It's just not. And I'm a Bullock fan. I do like her. But there was just something about the first Speed.
I mean, the lead is the whoever, I don't even know, Jason something plays like the cop. Bad. But Willem Dafoe as a villain?
Keanu. I guess so. Yeah, Dafoe's a good villain, but like young, hot Keanu.
Yeah. And Dennis Hopper is like the perfect amount of maniacal in that movie.
Yeah, just like a perfect. I'm always chasing. Sorry, we're just going full on Speed. But like I'm chasing even the aesthetic. Because that aesthetic of like that movie and that kind of era of film has burned itself into my brain is, again, like to go back to when we talked about comfort films. But if a movie sort of looks and feels that way, and like I always remember before Sandra Bullock gets on the bus, she's like, she's getting her coffee, she's getting the paper, she's like getting to the bus stop, and it's like her neighborhood, and it's like a hot day, and the tint of the camera is like a hot day tint that used to get used and doesn't really anymore. Anyway, I'm always chasing that aesthetic in like all films I eventually come back to. Gotta say, rewatch Twister recently. It's very close.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. That's a good one. Is there a particular game in recent NBA history that has that Speed aesthetic to you?
That's a good question.
Like there's the sort of slow ease in, but you've also got like a pretty serious action sequence at the beginning as well, with the elevator scene. You've got the just sort of the frantic pace of it, the sort of nerves of it at all times, like realizing, oh, this shit can go off the rails at any point. Like game 7 of the 2016 finals might be up there.
Yeah, I'm also thinking of games that go into OT and then double OT, probably that Blazers game. But that's like, then they didn't figure it out. The bus went below 60.
In
that situation.
Yeah, Damian Lillard got his head cut off by a subway light.
Oh God. That also scarred me for life.
Yeah, that's a messed up death. It really is. Shit, I'm gonna watch Speed real quick after finishing this podcast, Katie. We're gonna wrap it up there. That has been Sheed or Speed or Speed or Sheed. I forget the order in which I put the names in the original titling of it. Need for Sheed also works too. Let's move on, Katie, to the posters of the week, the way we close out every episode of the podcast. And for mine, to start off, I have an audio clip. Producer Dylan, take it away.
Ooh, look what we have here. Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Oh, I bet you can't get around me, LeBron. Oh, I know I can. I know all the tricks. Let's go!
Dad, what are you doing? You know we're going to tell Uncle LeBron about this.
That's Chris Bosch, clearly getting a cut of the Space Jam profits to act out the film with dolls at home and then have a cute interaction with his child. You know, I'm not really thrilled about Space Jam. I'm probably not going to see it right away, Katie, but this was nice. You know, Chris Bosch doing some viral marketing on behalf of LeBron James, being a good teammate, as he always has been.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good one. I wonder if he's sad he's not. Maybe he has a cameo, but I don't think he does.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it sounds like every everything has a cameo in that movie. Just all of the IP is in that movie in some way. I would hope Chris Bosch gets a role. Maybe he's the coach or something. Maybe he's like, you know, maybe he knows the script so well because he's part of it. Maybe he wrote it. Maybe he edited it. I don't know. But that's my poster of the week. Katie, are you going to see Space Jam? Theaters
no.
open this weekend.
That's maybe an illegal download.
We can bleep that part out so LeBron doesn't come hunting for us. Katie, what is your poster of the week?
Mine is Kyle Lowry. Oh my god, what's the name of this board?
Wakeboarding.
Like, it's not a boogie board. Yeah, mine is Kyle Lowry wakeboarding on, I think, in Lake Tahoe. It's screaming and being real happy about it.
Yeah, it's outstanding. We did a whole Locked On Raptors episode this week talking mostly about Kyle Lowry on a wakeboard and golfing. If you want to go listen to that for deeper thoughts, but it's beautiful stuff. Kyle Lowry, do more water sports, I say. Are you getting worried Kyle's leaving our beloved Raptors, by the way? I'm getting worried, Katie.
No, I'm not worried.
I'm glad to hear you're holding it together because I am not. That feels like a good place to wrap things up, though, Katie. This was a lot of fun, of course. Thanks so much for hanging. And anything that you want to promote?
Yeah, I had a great interview with Chinua Ogumokwe, who plays for the Sparks. And we just had like a really wonderful conversation. She's so funny. She's so smart. She works extremely hard. But that's on Dime. And I'm pretty bummed out that that FIBA, just evil, just inordinately like evil.
Garbage.
And makes its own rules up on a whim, honestly. But they've... Since I wrote that story, they've denied Nneka, her sister, to be able to play for Team Nigeria. So that really sucks because the two of them and their other sister were going to play and basically make history.
It's real stupid. FIBA is trash. The Olympics are garbage. Don't watch them, I would say. They're a horrible thing that shouldn't be taking place. There's still a state of emergency going on in Tokyo, by the way. Very chill. The Olympics start in a week. But yeah, that feels like the place to leave it. For me, you can find me on Twitter, of course, at Woodley Sean. You can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/abasketball with two H's. Leave a rating. Not a rating. Leave us $4 US or $5.50 Canadian. You can leave a rating to us on Apple Podcasts if you'd like. That's very much appreciated, too. Nice little review goes a long way with algorithms and all that good jazz. Stuff I have to promote. Just Locked On Raptors. Still going, doing draft coverage. Did, as I talked about earlier, Katie and I came on the podcast, and we did a little summer vacation check-in on the Raptors as well. So that's what you have to look forward to over there. And that'll do it. We'll talk to you again next week after the finals are over, Katie. It's going to be postseason time, the draft, the free agency, the summer vacation and everything on the horizon. We will, of course, talk to you next week with another episode of Basketball?